Hello, and welcome to the Olympic and Bundy podcast. I'm Kelly Taylor. Today on the show is the man who just received an official day in the city of Los Angeles on June 13th in his name, Tony McEwing. This week, he's celebrating his 25th anniversary on Fox 11 as an anchor here, and there have been a lot of surprises for him. He doesn't necessarily love the attention, but he's very grateful and appreciative of all the love. And he talks about it coming up, as well as his early time in the South Side of Chicago and what made him switch from law school to becoming a newsman. Enjoy.
From the Fox 11 studios in Los Angeles, California, it's the Olympic and Bundy podcast with host Kelly Taylor.
So, Tony, are you ready for this week to be over?
You know what? It's been exhilarating. It's been exciting. It's been a bit overwhelming. And you know what? As much as I appreciate everything that's going on, I'm sick of me. I can't believe that everybody else isn't sick of me by now. You know, it's really wonderful, and it's great to be recognized for 25 years here in Los Angeles. And, you know, I didn't even really think of it that much, obviously. I mean, I knew my anniversary was coming up, but I wasn't thinking that much about it. In fact, I scheduled a colonoscopy for this week. Yeah. Because you got to do those things, you know.
Yeah.
When you get
definitely
my age.
Definitely do.
And so I scheduled a colonoscopy, and then management called me and said, no, you can't do that this week because we have stuff going on. So that was my first inkling that something was going to be going on, but I still didn't know what. I have been surprised every single day.
Yeah. Literally on the way up here, we were saying, like, there's one surprise, and then there's like a better surprise that happens after that.
And the camel, please, really? I mean, I thought my camel riding days were over.
That was
with the first faux pas.
Can I just say before you walked out, Aroxia was sat on the camel in kind of the waiting area, just in front of the driveway of our building, and it's really busy. Like, you know, Bundy, there's cars stopped all the time, so they obviously see this woman sat on a camel, and people are trying to pull into our building, and the camel's blocking the way, and the security guys are like, "Just go around the camel,"
Funny. Well, you don't expect to see a camel when you show up to work.
No, exactly. I know. I feel like I've learned so much about you in doing this.
Yeah.
You know, just in like, I know that you've said you don't necessarily love all the attention.
Yeah. It's a little,
Yeah. But it's kind of
it's
cool because.
Much, but it's wonderful.
Yeah. It's like people, I personally, and if it's me, it's obviously a lot of people. Like, I didn't know that you could sing. I didn't know that you.
Allegedly,
yeah. In certain, you know, certain times, in the car. I also didn't know that you were from Chicago.
Yeah. Born and raised on the South Side of Chicago. Went to public schools, and then went to Northwestern University in Chicago. Technically, it's in Evanston, but it's okay. We'll say Chicago because that's nobody knows where Evanston is unless you're from that area, pretty much.
Yeah.
I spent almost all of my years there until I was 24. Then
I got my
first job in Sacramento.
Did you like Chicago?
I love Chicago. I still love Chicago. I love my hometown. What I don't like is the weather. Can't deal with the weather. And in fact, it's kind of interesting because I actually had decided, I was 24 when I got my master's degree, when I was finishing up school, and I said, I don't know where I'm going to get a job, but I know one thing, I cannot spend another winter in Chicago, and this was coming up on the summer of that year, and I said, I'm sorry, I can't do it, I can't do another winter, I just can't.
Right.
And fortunately, I got a job in California where... Do we have winter here in California? I don't think we really do.
I mean, allegedly, but
supposedly,
I can't tell.
You know, but I mean, oh my goodness, that was the best move I could possibly have made. I mean, I fell in love with California, and I've been here ever since.
The thing about Chicago is I'm from Ohio, and a lot of people moved to Chicago.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of people moved to Chicago. It's kind of like the New York of the Midwest.
Yeah.
And I feel like we'd always go there for St. Patrick's Day and, you know, just to...
Or when they dye the Chicago River green.
Yeah, exactly. And so that really is the... I'd been going in the summer and around then, but then one time when I went in the winter, it really is because it's so windy.
It's crazy cold.
It's freezing cold.
Well, and because, you know, we... And I think Ohio may get some of this too, but, we get the Canadian... Arctic air.
Yeah.
And it's just crazy cold. I mean, I remember when I was growing up, there were days, I mean, granted, they were few and far between, but it did happen when we had 60 degree below zero wind chills. I mean, really? That's insane. I mean, polar bears like freeze at that temperature.
Yeah.
It's just crazy.
I'm good with that. I'm good. So do you have family there still?
I still have family there. In fact, I'll be going back to Chicago toward the end of the month. My mom is going to be there. She doesn't live there anymore. She lives in Arkansas, which is where she's from originally. My younger sister is going to be there. She's also in Arkansas. My older sister is in Chicago, she and her husband and my nephews. So we're having sort of a mini family reunion there toward the end of this month because since my mom left Chicago to go back to Arkansas in 1977, she's never been with all of her kids in Chicago since that time. So this will be the first time that all of us will be assembled there in Chicago with our mother since 1977.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so that's going to be great. And that's, you know, one of the 2 or 3 days that I actually will go to Chicago.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, there's a very small window for visiting Chicago if you want good weather.
Yeah, oh yeah,
so
right now.
I think I'm well within that window.
Yeah, literally right now. Is there a particular place that you like to go and visit, like a restaurant or, you know?
Gino's East.
Oh, what's that?
Pizza. Oh my goodness.
Is that like
the
classic
best
deep
pizza
dish?
On the planet? Come on, Chicago pizza, Chicago-style pizza. New York is the only place that rivals us, and they barely rival us.
Barely. Oh, fighting words.
I mean, Chicago's pizza is legendary, as well it should be.
Yeah.
Especially deep dish pizza.
Yeah.
I have to watch how I say that. Deep dish pizza. That is, oh my goodness, I mean, I'm not even a big fan of deep dish pizza. That's the funny thing about it. I really like thin crust, super, super thin crust pizza. Because I don't really care for the crust that much. But oh my goodness, I mean, a deep dish pizza in Chicago, unlike any
It's one of those things, like whenever you're in a particular city that's like known for that thing, it just tastes better there.
Oh, it's like Philadelphia cheesesteaks.
Yeah. It's like,
you know, I went to Philadelphia, I had a cheesesteak. You know, and I've tried to eat them since then. When they weren't in Philadelphia, they don't taste the same.
Yeah.
I mean, they really don't. I mean, you know, Philadelphians will tell you, you go anywhere else and have a cheesesteak, it's just not the same as Philadelphia. Same thing with pizza. You know, you go anywhere else, they can come close. Even here in LA, there are a couple of places that come close.
Yeah.
But you can't really nail it.
Yeah. I know someone was telling me how the bagels in New York, they try to make them here, but they import
New York bagels, yeah.
It's like there's certain water that they use.
Yeah, I can see that. I can totally see that. You know? Like when I went to France, even. When I was in Paris and I had the chocolate eclairs, France ruined me.
Really?
For chocolate eclairs here in the United States.
They're so good.
Because they taste like cardboard here, comparatively. I don't know what the French do, but their pastries are phenomenal, and they just don't taste the same anywhere else.
No. No, it's so, but another thing I learned is that you're really healthy.
I try to be really healthy. Yeah.
Do you have like a pretty strict diet?
Yeah, it is now. I mean, it used to be like fair.
Yeah.
Now it's like super strict. Yeah. Because so I've just become really proactive. You know, no one wants to know my diet because then they're like, no, nobody's going to do that. Because you know what? Because I eat pretty much the same thing every day.
Do you?
I do.
What's like, what
like
do you
eat? Just about every meal.
What do you eat for breakfast?
I have ground turkey patties,
okay,
low fat, uh-huh, and zucchini.
Oh, like sauteed?
Yeah, yeah, like really, yeah.
And then do you bring that here and eat it?
I do.
In between the
And then
show
for
show?
Lunch, I have ground turkey patties and zucchini. And then for an early evening meal, I have ground turkey patties and zucchini. And then for dinner, I have ground turkey patties and
Wait,
zucchini.
Really?
Yeah, I'm serious. I mean,
you don't sway from that.
Well, you know, occasionally I do. If I like get tired of it,
yeah,
you know, I'll like throw in like a piece of chicken or something, but no salt, no sugar, you know, no liquids other than water.
Wow, you don't drink coffee,
no.
Tea?
Well, you know what? I do have tea on the set here.
Oh, okay.
But that's it. That's the only variation whatsoever.
Wow. So,
And it's green tea, by the way.
So it's like a large amount, though, of ground turkey and, right? I mean, because.
And every now and then I'll have a steak. I can do that. I can throw a steak in. It's most, you know, as long as it's protein.
Yeah.
You know, it's fine. But no, I don't have starchy carbs.
Wow. And is that because.
And I have some fruit every now and then, too.
Was that because maybe you were eating poorly before and then you, wanted to get your health in check, or like what?
Well, you know what happens when you get of a certain age? You wouldn't know, but let me tell you what you have to look forward to.
Yeah.
When you get of a certain age, your metabolism really slows down. And you really don't need a lot of the food that you're eating. You just don't need it because your body simply can't utilize it as efficiently or, you know, utilize a lot of it at all. Because you're just not doing as much, unless you are super active or you're just one of those rare people who has an extremely active metabolism.
Genes.
Yeah. So, you know, what I found out is that I, even though I had worked out all, you know, much of my life, most of my life since I was maybe 27 years old, actually 26, you still find out, you know, everything changes over the decades. And so you just, even though I was fairly muscular, I also had a fair amount of fat. Because I, you know, just didn't need a lot of the food that I was eating. And so you really learn, thanks to my, you know, fitness life coach, Jay Williams, Jaynetics.
Who, thanks to Aroxia.
Yeah, what you find out is that, a person my age just doesn't need to eat a lot of extraneous stuff. Now, I do cheat occasionally because, you know, but I do it in moderation. So I will have sweets. I mean, I'm not that fanatical. I mean, I will have, you know, sweets or something, but I do it in moderation. If I have something one day, I only have that one thing that day, and trust me, I'll go in and do cardio to work it off. I mean,
really?
And that's what I do. It's like, okay, look, if you're going to do that, then you have to do that. And then I keep it in moderation. I just,
what's like the one thing that you,
gelato. Before you even get it out. I have a weakness for gelato. I love gelato. You know, I mean, first of all, it just tastes so, because you know what? I was one of those kids that when we had ice cream, I didn't like it hard. I liked to play them. Did you ever do that? Stir it up until it gets nice.
I prefer
like soft
serve.
Yeah. So I would do that. So gelato is perfect for me. You know, I was a perfect candidate to love gelato, and I do. I love it. When I was first exposed to it in San Francisco years ago, I was like, what is this stuff?
Yeah.
And do you know something? A lot of people don't know. Gelato actually has fewer calories than regular ice cream.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what's the difference in that it's...
Well, they're not the same. They're not made with the same. Well, some of the same ingredients, but mostly not the same ingredients. I mean, I think gelato is much purer.
Yeah, it's
with
like a little more sour.
Yeah,
than ice
I think you don't have a lot of the fat stuff that it's just made with cream and whatever it's
made
with.
Yeah. Have you been to Italy?
Never.
Ooh, you should go there in search of gelato. Yeah.
I hear there's gelato in Italy. You know, see, and I don't know that I want to do that because if I go,
well, yeah, I mean,
see,
it could
if I
be
go
a
to
France
Italy
situation.
And then I eat the gelato there, then I'll come back here and never eat it again. So,
yeah.
Which is what happened with the, you know, chocolate eclairs in France. So
yeah.
I don't know that I want to do that.
Yeah, avoid probably. It could ruin it for you. So also, you went to law school.
I did.
Right?
I did.
What kind of lawyer do you think you would have?
I know what I would
become.
Have done. And can you imagine? I mean, given what I'm doing now, I was well on my way to becoming a tax attorney.
What?
I mean, could
do you like?
I mean, I hear people now in your audience go. I mean, it's like tax attorney.
Were you a pretty good student in school? Like, did you enjoy sitting in the classroom?
Yeah, I did well in law school. It wasn't like I didn't do well. It was just. After my second year, and let me just tell you something. Law school is 3 years. I know all the lawyers out there. A lot of them are going to just, you know, cringe when I say this, but it's true. You don't need 3 years of law school to be a lawyer. You really don't. To be a good lawyer. I mean, honestly, law school, I believe the law profession has made it 3 years so they can weed people out.
Yeah.
You don't need to go to school. It's not like a doctor.
Right.
You don't need to go to school for 3 years to be a lawyer. Honestly, when you've done, because let me tell you something, the first year of law school is the most important because that's where you get a lot of your basic skills. You get to hone a lot of your basic skills like legal writing and things like that. And you get the basics of law, property, torts, things like that. Second year, you get into some of the meatier subjects like civil procedure and things like that. Those are really important courses. Third year, it's all electives. It's like whatever you want to take. Oh, I think I'll take this. Oh, I think I'll... You don't need that third year.
Really?
You don't. You really don't. You don't.
So did you graduate from law school?
I didn't. I didn't go to third year.
Oh, okay.
I just knew, but I knew what happened the third year.
Yeah. You know, I used to work at the law school at where I went to college at University of Cincinnati in the library. And I was the only undergrad. I worked, the rest were law students. And the whole time they were reading.
Oh, yeah,
just
no.
Read.
Well, first of all, it's insane because you can't do all the work they give you. You just can't.
Yeah.
I mean, you have five courses, say, for instance, in law school, and each of your professors may assign you, think about this, you have five courses, each of your professors may assign you three or four cases per night to read to discuss for the next day's class. Each of those cases sometimes are as long as 25, 30 pages. Really?
Oh my gosh, yeah.
You're not going to do, you can't do all of that in one night. I mean, come on, I don't care if you, I don't care what kind of speed reader you are. You cannot, and legal writing is not like the, you know, the easiest writing to get through and decipher. I mean, come on, all the wherefores, where-tos, heretofores.
Yeah.
I mean, I mean, come on.
So what was like the moment that made you change your course?
After I was coming up on the end of my second year of law school, and I just thought, you know, I'm not feeling this.
Yeah.
I'm just not feeling this. I mean, I had decent grades, but I was just like, I'm not feeling this. So I didn't really know what to do at that point because I didn't know what to do when I graduated from undergraduate school when I thought I was going to be a high school English teacher because that's what my major was, secondary English education.
Oh,
and then
gosh.
I did my student teaching my winter quarter because we were on the quarter system at Northwestern, winter quarter, which was the quarter before graduation.
Okay.
So here I am in my senior year, winter quarter, with only one other quarter to go before I graduated and did my student teaching and realized I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
What am I going to do with my life? I panicked. And that's why I applied to law school because I had great grades. Got into law school, went for 2 years, and I thought, I don't want to do that either. So then I thought, what am I going to do with my life? I was panicking then because I was you know, at the ripe old age of 23. And so so I applied. I knew I liked writing. So I thought, okay, well, fine. I'll apply to the Graduate School of Journalism because Northwestern has one of the best journalism schools in the country. So I did. I applied, and I got in. And I thought, okay, but I actually went as a magazine major because I thought I wanted.
That's right. I heard you say that on the show.
I thought I wanted to work for like Time Magazine or U.S. News World Report. You know, I mean, you know, one of those, Newsweek, because I like the way the write. You know, I like that kind of writing. I like that more creative, flowery type of writing as opposed to, you know, newspaper writing, which.
Right.
Although that's gotten more creative, but typically it's just very straightforward. So while I went, while I was in school, I was in the summer program because I had no previous journalism experience. So they made me come to the program early, the summer program, because in the fall I was going to be competing against working journalists who were going back to school to get their master's degrees. And so they wanted to, you know, for people who had no previous journalism experience, they wanted us to be ready to compete against these guys because it's a very competitive, program. So I went during the summer, and during that summer, one of my instructors said, have you ever thought about broadcasting? I was like, no, broadcasting, why would I do that?
Did you watch the news?
Yeah, I did, actually.
Like, I mean, because I know more people just generally watch the news because there was less to watch anyways.
Yeah, there was less to watch. We didn't have the internet or any of that stuff.
Yeah.
We didn't have any of the stuff you guys have now.
Yeah.
You know,
it's endless. It's endless.
Social media, what? Social what?
Yeah, right.
There was no such thing. So, yeah, I mean, that's how, you know, more people at that time, I still think a large percentage of people do, but more people at that time, certainly for sure, got most of their news, you know, from television, rather.
Yeah.
Television and radio.
I guess, so when you were younger, do you remember being sort of like trying to read the news or keep up with the news?
When I was a kid, no, I had no interest. In fact, when the news would come on, I would quickly switch the channel.
Boring. Yeah.
You know, I wanted to find cartoons or something. I mean, I became interested in the news, I think, in high school.
Okay.
But not as a profession, just in terms of watching it.
Yeah.
You know, and then when I got in college, I would watch it all the time. Because I felt like I needed to be informed. I mean, what a concept.
Yeah.
And news was different then.
At what year were you in college, undergrad?
I was an undergrad from 74 to 78.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. So, but then by the time you're in journalism school and your professor says, hey, have you thought about broadcast?
Yeah, I said, I don't think so. I don't think that's me. I don't. What makes you think I should do
Did
that?
Did he think that you just kind of had like a magnetic personality?
I have no idea what he was thinking. But in fact, when I told him that, you know, I don't think that's who I am. He says, well, you know, I've been in this field a lot longer than you, and I think you're wrong. And I was wrong, clearly.
Yeah.
He said, take a course in the fall, see what you think. I did, and I fell in love with it.
Were you just, like, practicing how to read a teleprompter?
Oh, no. You know, we didn't even get to do that. Gosh, I don't even know that we had a teleprompter at our disposal. Because we were really learning to be reporters.
Oh, okay.
So, it was just, first we did some radio stuff, And then we had cameras, so we actually did TV stuff, but there was no prompter. And we had to learn how to edit our own stuff. I mean, we had to do all of that because, you know, typically you start in very small markets when you start in this business. And so you have to do all of that stuff. You have to know all that stuff. And it's funny how we've now gone back to that where even in big markets, reporters are now editing their own stuff and stuff. But, you know, at the time, that was unheard of.
Yeah.
You know, everything was unionized and in the bigger markets. And you just, you know, editors were editors, writers were writers, reporters were reporters. And, you know, you didn't mix those skills. So, you know, I just found it fascinating. I mean, I thought, you know, and then the first time I saw myself on camera, I was like, who is that guy? And, you know, because I had never been on camera before. I'd never been videotaped ever. 1980 was the first time that I'd ever been on videotape. And I'd never seen myself on videotape before.
I heard you say that you don't like taking pictures. And when
I don't
they
like taking
wheeled
still
out,
pictures. Yeah.
When they wheeled out that cake and it was like maybe a high school picture, you were oh, I hated taking pictures.
Yeah.
So did you kind of have that same reaction?
No,
on
you know,
camera?
It's funny because even though I still hate taking still pictures, video is different. Because on video, what I found I really liked was that you didn't just see me sitting there smiling, you know, this mug.
Yeah.
You know, you actually got to experience my personality.
Right.
And for me, personality made all the difference between being on video and just, you know, smiling, you know, for a still
looking
picture.
Yeah.
It just, it made all the difference in the world. And I realized, and even then, because I was kind of a shy person, pretty introverted. I mean, I had friends and stuff, but, you know, outside of that, I wouldn't like venture very far. I wasn't gregarious like you see me now.
Yeah.
And what I discovered through video and through broadcasting was that there was a whole lot more to me than I even knew was there.
Like it brought it out.
And it brought it out. Aww. It really did. The camera brought all that stuff out. And you know what? I bet you a lot of actors have the same experience. I mean, you know, I don't consider what we do acting, although there is some of that. But I bet you a lot of actors, because if you know, one in particular, Kevin Costner, he's a really shy guy.
Yeah.
You know, he's really kind of an introverted guy. But when you see him.
Yeah. Oh, for
on
sure.
Screen, it's a whole different persona.
Yeah, that's such a good point. I feel like you could say that about so many
famous
actors.
I think a lot of them are people
and musicians.
Yeah, and I think a lot of them are really actually, you know, kind of fragile people with you know, fragile personalities and egos. And, you know, I mean, people think that, you know, a lot of them, I'm sure there are some of them that are arrogant and really over the top, you know, narcissistic, but a lot of them are really pretty fragile people.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I was watching a really old interview with Julia Roberts, and she sort of seemed much more shy and polite and kind of small compared to, you know,
when
her,
you see her on screen, whole different thing. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I think the same thing of Brad Pitt. I don't know if, you know, but I think he's not the same in person as you tend to see him on the screen.
Yeah, that's such an interesting point. So it brought out the,
it brought out a lot. And so I don't know that I ever would have discovered a lot of who I am and have become had it not been for broad. In fact, I'm pretty certain I wouldn't have. I mean, there are a lot of dimensions to me that I don't think would ever have been explored had I not gone into broadcasting. And so for me, just personally, it absolutely fit me hand in glove. I mean, it was absolutely no question, unequivocally, the profession I should have been in.
Yeah. And what you in this job, like all of the years you've been doing this, it throws you into all these situations that, you know, around really tragic situations, uncomfortable situations.
Well, and that's the other thing, because I am like an unbelievably emotional person. I mean, I cry during commercials. I really do. Come on. Commercials are like 30 seconds long. And
same.
I can cry during a commercial. It's like, really? But it's true. You know, and so I'm really sensitive that way. And you know, and I think that's been an asset. Mm-hmm. To me in this business, I think
you're empathetic.
Yeah, because I think I can feel what people are actually feeling, and what whether I've actually, you know, gone through that specific thing myself, I can kind of as much as possible put myself in their shoes and sort of understand what they're going through, and I like to think that kind of comes across on camera.
Yeah, definitely. I think it
you know. So you know, I think that's just another you know, I know we're supposed to be like the, you know, really objective. Well, I think we are supposed to be objective when it comes to taking certain sides on issues and things like that. Of course, you know, we should be, unless you're a commentator. I mean, unless you are an opinionator.
Yeah.
You know, you're one of those guys. But in news, you should, you know, be objective. But I think when it comes to stories of the heart, I don't think you can be objective. And I don't think you should come across as being objective.
Right. Yeah. I mean, when you're... And when you're sitting with people,
no, you're
who
feeling.
Just...
You know that mother who just lost her son during the war. How can you sit there and act like that doesn't affect you? Of course it affects. It should.
Yeah, it should. If it doesn't, that could
it should affect you.
That could be a red flag. Sure.
Whether you know someone or not who's been in that situation, or whether you've experienced that situation or not, that should affect you.
Yeah.
I remember 9/11. 9/11 was just so tough for me. So tough for me.
Were you working in the morning?
Yeah, and when it happened. Live on the air, you know, both times, and you know, with both planes, and you know, you go into autopilot initially because you have to do your job,
right?
And that's what happened. But I will tell you, like after doing that nonstop, all day, every day, I remember after like that second week when people were coming down to the World Trade Center, what was left of the World Trade Center, with pictures of their relatives,
I know.
I went home and honestly, I cried for an hour or more. I couldn't, at that point, I just couldn't take it. You know, how can you say that I'm a journalist, I'm objective in a situation like that? How can you?
You can't.
How can you? You can't.
No, man, that's, and it's even like the way that all of that played out, it's almost like the intensity of the situation just grows and grows and grows, you know, hour to hour, day to day after that. That's,
I think that, you know, there is certainly a degree of objectivity when it comes to journalism, but we're not robots. Mm-hmm. You know, we do feel.
Yeah.
And, you know, you do have opinions. And while I don't, you know, I think it's a fine line.
Yeah.
I think you have to know when it's appropriate to show that and when it's not appropriate.
Right. So you came here in 93?
93. Yeah, June of 93.
June of 93. Today? When was the
today,
actual
I think
day?
I think today is my actual anniversary. I think it is.
Very good.
Don't hold me to that. But I think
we'll check after this. and I mean, you've worked a long time before you even came here.
I worked 12 years. I was really fortunate. I worked 12 years in Sacramento. And then I came here. I mean, those are the only two places I've ever worked.
Did you briefly do something in D.C. or no?
Well, I did, but that was part of school.
Oh, okay.
Northwestern had in its broadcast program, well, not just broadcasting, actually in print as well. They have a news service in Washington, D.C. called the Medill News Service because it's the Joseph Medill School of Journalism. Medill, obviously, a great journalist. And... The school runs a news service in Washington, D.C., and so you're not required, but you are encouraged to participate in that program. It may be a requirement now. At the time, it was optional, but I did.
Yeah.
And so for the 3 months, that winter quarter of 1980, I was in Washington, D.C. I remember it well because that was during the inauguration of Ronald Reagan to his first term. And it was bitter cold that year. In fact, I think Ronald Reagan's inauguration was one of the coldest on record. I'm very serious. And, you know, but he looked perfect, of course, because he was Ronald Reagan.
Yes.
But that being said, I was assigned to the way the news service worked is that newspapers, magazines, radio stations, and television stations from around the country would subscribe to the news service that Northwestern ran, and the students would be assigned to these various media entities, and you became the Washington correspondent for those entities for the 3 months that you were there, which is amazing experience for a student.
Okay, so you're sent from Northwestern to be a Washington correspondent in D.C., but maybe the reports that you're doing are being given to, like, Pittsburgh or just a random place.
Well, you're assigned to a specific station, and I was very fortunate to be assigned to the largest station that subscribed to the news service at the time, and that was WDSU in New Orleans, pre-Katrina. So that was a large market. That was a top 30 market. And I was assigned to that as a student to be their Washington correspondent. Well, that gave me an amazing reel.
Yeah.
And I think that was the reason when I graduated, I was able to get a job in a top 20, essentially a top 25 market.
Yeah.
In Sacramento, because the way they looked at me, even though I was a student, I already had experience working in a top 30 market.
Wow. So when you moved to San Francisco or Sacramento, this is the first time you're leaving home, right?
Essentially. Because I was away at college, but yeah.
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 Were you nervous?
I was excited. They weren't paying me any money, by the way. Yeah. I mean, not really.
Yeah.
Just so you guys know, I was making $250 a week. Now, granted, this was 1981, but that was still no money.
Yeah.
I was making $12,000 a year as an on-the-street reporter in the, you know, the 26th largest television market.
Wow.
And, you know, so I would run out of money after 2 weeks, but that's another story for another day. You know, I would run out of money before my next paycheck. Because I think I was netting at that time, like, I think after taxes, I was netting like $350 for 2 weeks.
So did you have roommates or anything?
No, I stayed by myself and, you know. But rents were different. At that time, I think I was paying for what was considered a luxury apartment. I was paying $245 a month.
God, can you imagine that right now?
You can't even stay
now?
In a closet for that.
No, that whole area is like, I mean, San Francisco is expensive, obviously, but even Sacramento, areas,
it's
Oakland.
A lot more expensive now. But even with that, that was a lot of money for me, for someone who was making only, you know, netting only $350 a week, you know, every 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
I couldn't afford anything. I mean, honestly, I mean, people were like, you know, would take pity. I was practically, you know, I was like two steps away from the soup line. I really was. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm glad I went through that. And, you know, I didn't even care. I didn't even care that I wasn't making any money. I was having so much fun doing what I love to do.
Yeah.
It didn't matter to me that I was making no money.
Yeah.
I would have done it for free. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so because this whole week you're being surprised with things, I think you're being beckoned on to be surprised
with
another thing.
Hey.
But thank you very much for taking the time to come up here.
Oh, this is fun.
Because you're the man, and I feel like this whole week has, like I said before, I've been able to learn things about you. Anytime, like just when you work with people every day and you get the chance to just like learn something about them, just even if it's a little thing like you're a good singer or, you know, things like that, I appreciate that. So,
well, thank you. I appreciate being invited to do this. This was fun.
Come back.
Okay. I'll come back.
Yes, definitely.
I'll be back.
Thank you for listening to the Olympic and Bundy podcast. There are so many funny stories of Tony that we didn't even get to. Just Google when you have a second. Tony McEwing on a camel for a laugh. It's hilarious. If you haven't already, subscribe to Olympic and Bundy on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify. And if you're liking the show, please leave a rating and review. We would love it. Once again, I'm Kelly Taylor, and thank you very much for listening.